Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back. Your dreams were your ticket out. Welcome back to that same old place that you laughed about. Well, the names have all changed since you hung around, but those dreams have remained and they've turned around. Who'd have thought they'd lead ya?
Who'd have thought they'd lead ya?
This is Carl from Union Legion, and we are very pleased, and we welcome back an old friend to the podcast and former podcaster. So that's why this is called Carl's Cavern with a twist of Limes Marshall. Limes, welcome back.
Oh, buddy, I always wanted to be John Travolta. That's amazing. So I get to be Vinnie Barbarino now? Is that it?
Yeah, sure. You know, with an English accent, what's for me? I don't fucking care.
Oh my God, I was dying when you started playing that. That was incredible. That was amazing. Good to be back, buddy.
Absolutely, and you know, we'll catch up with you in the next couple of weeks. Lunch has actually agreed to come back for 4 weeks in a row, which I'm impressed with, by the way. And we're so happy to have you back. Seriously, you know, you're always going to be a part of the family, and don't you ever forget that.
Oh, thank
you.
Right. Just when I thought I was out, you pulled me back in.
They pulled me back in.
Oh, what's the deal for tonight, my man? So what's the deal for tonight, Carl? What are we all about tonight, my man?
Well, considering it was your idea that you pitched to me, I think you should say it.
Oh, man, yeah. Well, you know, look, you said to me, you know, what you want to talk about, right? So, yeah, let's, you know, we're both genre guys, right? We're both, you know, sci-fi horror guys, right? And, you know, let's get into some TV and anthologies tonight. I mean, I know for myself, that's a lot of where it began for me. What about you?
Oh, absolutely. I was very young. Now I'm a bit older than you, and so I remember being like 6 years old or 7 years old, six or seven, maybe even five. And Twilight Zone was on first run at this point, and my grandmother would visit. My parents wouldn't let me watch it. Exactly, and she would sneak me downstairs, and we'd watch it on the old black and white downstairs in the cellar. And also at that time, you know, The Outer Limits too. So I've been hooked on this stuff forever. Seriously.
What do you think? I'm going to ask this now because, I mean, geez, we could do a whole hour, 2 hours talking just about Twilight Zone and Outer Limits, right? But before we go there, what do you think it is about, like, just that anthology format that sucks you in? Like,
well,
I know what it is for me.
Well,
what
it is, of course, you know, the anthology format is a different story each week. And if something's presented well in the first week, you want to see where else they go. You know, it's a different mindset, or a different feel than like a drama where you get to know the characters of that. It's all new. And particularly if it's genre, it's science fiction, fantasy, horror, and you have a predilection toward those specific genres, then, you know, how can you not watch next week unless it sucks, right? But we're not going to be talking about any shows that suck. So,
no,
there.
Absolutely. Absolutely, no. And I mean, especially, you know, Twilight Zone in itself, it was such a sandbox of I mean, it wasn't always horror. It wasn't always sci-fi. It wasn't always, but you never knew what you were getting. I mean, I don't want to sound like fucking Forrest Gump there, but like the box of chocolates thing, but you never knew what you were going to get right from one week to the next.
You know, the other thing about the anthology format is that the writing has to be good. Okay, and it being compact within a half hour like Twilight Zone was, you had one of the best writers in television do that show, Rod Serling, of course. And the thing about Serling, you might not know what the specific episode's going to be, whether it's fantasy, horror, or whatever it would be, but you do get an idea of the writer's mindset and what they want to talk about. And of course, with Serling being a very, very liberal at the time and so on and so forth, he tackled such things as, you know, prejudice and the Nazis and all this type of thing. So it, you know, I mean, it became more than just a horror or sci-fi anthology in that case with Serling.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Because, I mean, what you're saying there, I mean, it kind of, it also ties into Star Trek in that same way that, they took these ideas, these things that, you know, you couldn't really talk, you weren't supposed to be talking about on television at that particular time, and managed to sneak so much past the television censors, because all they saw were the robots or the creature of the week or whatever. They didn't realize, and like you say, Serling was such a freaking genius. Like he could he could sneak any subject into one of these stories. Incredible.
And the same thing for
Outer Limits, right?
Oh, absolutely. So Twilight Zone, I have a question for you. If you had a specific one or two episodes that really, really meant something to you, what were they? Just out of curiosity.
Oh, okay. Number one is easy. Number one is The Howling Man. The Howling Man. I love that episode so much. I know probably stupid question. You're familiar with that episode?
Okay, this is Twilight Zone. Just give me the thumbnail of it. I'm sure I've seen it.
Okay, so the thumbnail is a traveler going through the mountains in a storm, gets lost, comes across a strange monastery where they take him in, give him, you know, food and shelter, and there's the one rule is
the devil in jail. Yes, yes. Okay,
right.
Gotcha.
Exactly, the dude that they've got in the cell, and it's like, who is this good God, that sends chills down my spine every time. Even though I know the climax and we know it's the devil and, you know, all this stuff that he's, oh my God, I love that episode. I love it to death. That's my easy number one. Number two. Oh, God. There's so many good ones.
I'm thinking my number one as you think of your number two. My number My number one is the Invaders. Okay,
is that the silent one? Is that the one with no talking in it?
Exactly. With Agnes Moorehead as the country woman who is invaded by this saucer and these tiny little astronauts. And you find out that the astronauts are actually from Earth and she's a giant on another planet. And it's just like, holy shit. I did not expect that coming. It's such a great... Agnes Moorehead just acts the living shit out of that role.
Oh, my God. That is a good one. That is a good one. And you know what? I got my number two.
Okay.
But you know what? I can't remember. I can't remember the title of the episode. It's William Shatner. And it's the one where they get stranded in the town and they go into the little cafe and he's got
the little devil thing that gives you your fortune. Yes, I know the one.
Spits out fortunes. And I'll give you a little aside of that. Obviously, my pal in the UK there, Emma Dark. Oh my God, man, she makes the best props. She made one of those. I don't know if she's made multiple ones, but she made a reproduction of that little fortune machine. It's incredible. I want one. I said to her, I want one. But yeah, I love that. I love that episode. And I don't know, man, Shatner, I don't know. I just feel like he, you know, we make jokes about him from time to time, his acting style and stuff like that. But bottom line, the man is a great actor. He really is. And he just classes up any episode he's in. And I love that one. That was brilliant.
Yeah, my second one is a very special one for me. It's called The Meek Shall Inherit the Earth. And that's the one with Art Carney as the department store Santa.
Okay.
Who is a drunk and that sort of thing. He's fired from his job. And what happens is he actually becomes Santa. And there are these beautiful speeches in this about being destitute and being poor and just absolutely incredible speeches that Serling wrote. And to this day, they just still brings shivers up my spine. The man was an incredible writer. He certainly was.
Yeah.
And there are so many. There's some lessons of Maple Street. So many of those great episodes. But you know what?
Yeah.
Everyone knows how good Twilight Zone is. Why don't we talk a little bit about Outer Limits and what your thoughts was on that?
Can I share? I want to share something with you about Outer Limits.
Okay, go
for it. I want to share something personal. That was my Friday night with my dad. I would sit up and watch that. It used to come on BBC Two on a Friday night, and I would sit and watch that with him. And he generally ended up falling asleep in the chair, as dads do. And I'd end up shitting my pants at I'd be awake on my own, be like, oh my God, what the hell? Dad, wake up. This is so fucking creepy. But I loved the concepts. And it's funny, I was just watching one again recently because I pulled out an old box set where I picked them up on DVD. And so I was going through a couple of the classics, you know, the Galaxy Bee in there with Cliff Robertson, where he's communicating with makes contact with the guy from the other galaxy and asking him about God and all these things. And I was just like, wow, this is so good. But the one that really sucked me in, and I was like, my God, this, I think this is more relevant now than it ever was, is, okay, so the name of the episode escapes me again. You're going to come to it. But it's Robert Culp. And there's a cabal of basically guys from, you know, from different nations. And, you know, it's one of these things where we're on the brink of war. We're in the brink of World War III. And someone comes up with the idea, look, you know, the only way we're going to, you know, kind of unite the planet is if we give a threat that's a threat to everyone. And they kind of draw lots out of a box, and they're going to the loser. They're going to mutate him, turn him into essentially a, like a fake extraterrestrial to fake a threat from outer space. So, right? And wow, I'm just like, this is so ahead of its time. Do you remember that one? Do you know the one I'm talking about?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, I do.
Do you remember the title?
Yeah. No, I'd have to look. And I can do that, but I don't think it's really necessary. The thing about The Outer Limits to me was I loved Twilight Zone, but to me, in many ways, I thought I even liked The Outer Limits better. I mean, I was into the Monster of the Week in that, but also the writing in this particular show was also exemplary. And one of the writers, of course, was Harlan Ellison, and I'll get to the episode. But there's just so many of those. I'm trying to think of a couple. The one with David McCallum, where he ages, and goes centuries and centuries and develops into this extraterrestrial human, is just an incredible episode. Oh man,
is that the one where he's got like this huge like bulbous head?
Yeah, exactly. He's the coal miner. He's the Welsh coal miner, and I forget exactly why, but then he hooks up with a scientist, and the scientist uses him as a test thing, and he like gets smarter and smarter and smarter. You know, and can levitate things and control with his mind. It gets really freaking scary. It's a really good episode.
What did you think of their whole concept of, I mean, because like we had this whole thing, you know, Outer Limits. You know, and like you say, they had a lot of, you know, they went out there and sort of did, you know, like the things like telekinesis and the you know, time travel and stuff. But they had the whole hook in initially was this whole thing of the bear, as they called it, right? Where they, you know, like which goes back to the old plays of centuries past, where things were going wrong with an audience. They would bring out a bear, right? And the bear was, that was what they called the extraterrestrial the creature of the week. What did you think of that whole concept of the bear? Did you like that, or did you kind of prefer the stories?
Absolutely. When I was a kid, you know, I was looking for that, and it scared a living shit out of me, but I didn't care. And I think actually what the outlet is the show that made my parents say I couldn't watch TV like that anymore. But seriously, but the one thing about Outer Limits, I think the best episode of Outer Limits was written by Harlan Ellison, and it's called A Demon with a Glass Hand. And that's an episode, I will just tell you, that's the first thing I ever watched on television that actually made me cry. At the end of that, when I realized what was happening to the Robert Culp, a character in that. And he played in like three episodes of Outer Limits. I mean, he loved that show. But when you find out that he's actually not only a robot, but he's got humanity in his wiring, and he has to basically live for 3,000 years before he can let them, you know, live again. It's just like being alone for 3,000 years. Man, that just destroyed me. Seriously.
That's crazy, yeah. And you know what? It's funny you mentioned that demon with a glass hand, because I know that that was the, or I'm 99.9% certain that was the season two premiere.
Yes.
Things aired differently in the UK. I guess they just maybe bought one of these like syndication packages and everything was kind of all mushed around and whatever. Because that was actually the first. That was actually the first episode I ever saw. That was the first one I ever saw, the demon with a glass hand. So I remember that one very well. A little bit of trivia, because obviously you're a Babylon 5 fan and I'm a Babylon 5 fan. They say there's a rumor, or I don't know so much a rumor, because it kept getting announced. I don't know whether it was a gag or what, but there was supposedly going to be a sequel to that episode on Babylon 5 called Demon on the Run. Did you read about that?
No, I did not know that.
Yeah,
did not know
apparently,
that. Well, I do know. Go ahead.
Yeah, no. Apparently, and again, some people have said, "Oh no, it was just a joke." But there are other people say, no, this thing was written, this script was written, and Harlan Ellison had written the script. But yeah, there was supposed to be a sequel to that episode called Demon on the Run. And to the best of my knowledge, they had got, or they were getting back Robert Culp. I don't know whatever became of it. But yeah, I thought that might interest you if you didn't realize.
I do know two things. I know that Joe Straczynski was a big Outer Limits fan, but also that Harlan Ellison was also credited as conceptual consultant, and they were very close. And there was somewhat of a break between the two of them in season four to season five. And what I understand is that there was talk of an episode, two episodes actually, that Harlan would write for season five. Only one of them came to fruition, and that was Scenes from a Gallery, which he wrote. But the second one was never produced, or I didn't even know it was written. But I do know that there were supposed to be two episodes that Harlan wrote for season five. So that's interesting. God, I wish that would
happen. Yeah.
Good.
Okay, so we're spiraling off, because you know what happens when we start talking about Babylon 5. That ends up being
That's a whole different episode. So let's move on.
Let's kind of head into the 70s.
Okay, and I was going to say let's head over to Britain too, because you've got some wonderful stuff that happened over there also.
Oh God, we had so many British anthologies. So we had Thriller, not to be confused with the Boris Karloff one. This was a British thriller, which was pretty good, because and it kind of dabbled between, it would kind of, the majority of them were just sort of straight up crime stories, but every now and again they would go into like the supernatural. There was one, The Stranger at the Top of the Stairs, which dealt with some sort of an immortal being that was living in a house. The Hungry Glass, The Pigeons from Hell. They did a bunch of them. And those, I'll tell you something, they creeped me out as a kid. I actually have a funny feeling. I think there's a few times when that thing was on the TV and my mom was like, yeah, you're off to bed now. That's it. No more. We had our own version of, and this is where it gets kind of weird. We had our own version of, okay, so you guys had Quinn Martin's Tales of the Unexpected. You remember that one?
Mm-hmm. I do.
So that went through a title change in the UK, because we had our own Tales of the Unexpected. Roald Dahl's Tales of the Unexpected. So when Quinn Martin's show came on, it was actually over there. It was called Twisting the Tale. But did our version of Tales from the Unexpected make it to your side of the pond? Did you ever see
Roald Dahl? No, not that I know of. Not that I know of. In fact, I'm making notes now to check it out. See if I can find something on YouTube or something.
That had some creepy stories. And one that springs to mind, actually had an American, God, what was her name? Elaine Stritch, I think, was her name. And it dealt with a woman that was, she was in an abusive relationship. You know, a controlling relationship. The guy was a complete asshole, you know, wouldn't let her wear certain things, told her, you know, sort of what to do, everything. All, you know, controlling playbook 101. And he passes away and becomes, and I can't remember whether there was something, whether there had been something signed off on before, but he's what's, left. Oh, no. My mistake. He's in an accident. Sorry. I apologize. He's in like a car accident or something. So he doesn't pass away, but he's in an accident where there's not much left of him. And I guess a scientist or a doctor says, hey, we've got this experimental procedure. We can possibly keep your husband alive. If we take these certain parts of his body and put them. So long story short, they end up putting his brain in a box and his eye in a box, and he can't really talk. He can just make these weird sounds to communicate. And she's like, yeah, keep him alive, keep him alive. And I guess the bottom line is it ends up kind of turning the tables where he's just this brain in a box with an eye, and she's just doing everything he hates around him just to torment him for the rest of whatever's left of his life. And my God, it was creepy. I was like, oh my God, I hope I never end up as a brain in a box of an eye. That would be awful.
Yeah.
Ever since I always make sure I treat people good after that, just in case they have that ability to get me stuck in a box just as an eye.
Yeah, you mentioned Pigeons from Hell, and I just needed to say that Boris Karloff's Thriller did a version of that, which is just absolutely brilliant.
Really, eh?
Yeah. Yeah. Seriously.
Talk to me about the Boris Karloff one, because I've got to tell you, in all my years as a horror fan, and it's probably a sin to say this, but I've never seen an episode of that. Talk to me.
So it's been many, many years since I've seen Boris Karloff's Thriller. Back in the 70s, syndication was big. And so you could see The Outer Limits, you could see Twilight Zone, you could see One Step Beyond, which is another one from early in our. You could even see Arch Hoopler's Lights Out occasionally on PBS. But Thriller, the thing about Thriller that makes it worthwhile, two words, Boris Karloff. Okay, mm-hmm. As a host, you see that man as a host with that voice. And think about the time that he's the Grinch, right? In that era. Mm-hmm. And that voice and that man and how tall he is. And he looks exactly like a funeral director. It's like, get me the fuck out of here. You know, seriously. And one of the things I love about Alfred Hitchcock's there was Alfred Hitchcock too. But Boris Karloff was just, it was wonderful. And a lot of his stuff was more along the Thriller line, like your show in Britain. It was more along the lines of, if not gothic horror, it had more of the ghost and the supernatural part of it. As opposed to, like, they would do killers too and serial killers and so on and so forth. But it was more attuned to that. It wasn't as it didn't really hit the social comments that Serling did. It wasn't Monster of the Week like Outer Limits, but it was more, it was just more, you know, creepy, more like chill up your spine type of thing instead of screaming at the TV, right? And that's what it was. And the thing is, it's Boris Karloff. I mean, that is the raison d'etre, actually, of the whole show. And he controlled a lot of what they wanted to do and what they adapted. And so you know, it was you know, I mean, you spend time with Boris Karloff, it's like, you know, he's a horror icon. And so you're just in the room and, like, someone's telling ghost stories to you. That's what Boris Karloff's thriller was. Someone tells you ghost stories. Okay.
So, you know, that kind of brings up another question. Because obviously, you know, you're talking about Boris Karloff being the host, right? And Twilight Zone, we had Rod Serling as the host. I can't remember for the life of me who did the voice on Outer Limits. We didn't have a physical host. It was a voice, right? But Alfred Hitchcock was a host. So how important do you think having an anthology series, like, and having a host as opposed to not having a host is?
Oh, you need a host. You know, even if you go into movie anthologies, there's always this setup, you know, at the beginning and at the end. It just, you know, you want some sort of continuity. If it's an anthology, you still want something that's going to draw the people in, whether it's the disembodied voice of Outer Limits, you know, we control your TV set, which was brilliant, okay, or Serling or whatever. You do need a host. And, I mean, even if you go to Tales of the Crypt and the Crypt Keeper, that was a host. That was John Cassier.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And so you can do it without a host. You can, because Masters of Horror did it. But I think it's a little more difficult. But even Masters of Horror had that wonderful opening that made you know that you were going to, this was what it's going to be, right?
Right.
You know, and with the music and the disembodied dolls and shit that's creepy as fuck. You know, I mean, you got all that stuff. So you know, there has to be continuity. So there has to be a host. The problem is there are some really bad hosts. Unfortunately.
Yeah. But this is true. This is true. Something weird when we're talking about hosts. Obviously, you know, we're both familiar with Tales from the Dark Side.
Mm-hmm.
That had a host when it aired in the UK. And it was Patrick McNee. Okay. And I've never seen, and I've got them all on, like, I picked up the box set. Because I love mm-hmm. Tales from the Dark Side, right? Obviously, you know, we're both big Romero guys, right? But Patrick McNee hosted at least the first season of that in the UK. And I've never seen those segments since. Have you ever seen the segments with Patrick McNee?
No, I've never seen those segments. No,
yeah?
I've never seen those. Now, I was reading up on this stuff. And I'm going to check something out as we're talking. But he did host a show, a horror anthology. But I didn't think it was Tales from the Dark Side. Let me take a look.
I swear to you right now on my life, he was – because he – and I'm going to actually – you know what? Maybe look on YouTube, see if somebody uploaded – because – it's not one of mine. My absolute favorite episode of Tales from the Dark Side is I'll Give You a Million. Remember that one with the guy where the two rich guys, they're having the bet, I'll give you $1 million for your soul. And then the guy finds out he's dying and he wants to buy his soul back and he dies before he does it. And comes back from the dead to bring the soul, but obviously the devil's got leans on it, so the devil pops up. And I can clearly remember Patrick McNee talking about the devil before and after the show and how he would be charming. He'd be the nicest guy at the party. He'd be the guy with the best jokes and all this stuff. And yeah, it's crazy. But I can remember a bunch of them, but I've never seen it since. And I always wonder, what was the deal there? Did they strike up some sort of deal with, you know, Thames Television or something, and it was done separately just for the UK audience? Or
I'm looking at his IMDb now, and I'm not seeing it listed. And it doesn't surprise me, actually. It doesn't surprise me. I'm thinking about Host and talking about British actors hosting. Terrence Stamp hosted the first season of The Hunger, which was a Showtime show. And then the next season, it was David Bowie.
Right. Okay. I remember the promo.
You're wonderful and that, but Terrence Stamp beats you, okay? I'm just saying. He wins that race. I love Terrence.
Oh my God! No, I'm a big Terrence Stamp fan. So you know what? I'm going to take a jump back, if you don't mind. I'm going to go back to the 70s again, and I'll tell you what was the scariest goddamn anthology show that I watched when I was a kid, and it's distinctly British. And for the life of me, I can't remember if I was watching Outer Limits first or this first, but it was Hammer House of Horror. Did you ever watch Hammer House of Horror?
In fact, Arrow had the whole Hammer House of Horror. Oh, I think it was 3 seasons. And oh yeah, I got through the first season, and boy, is that good!
Oh,
that is damn good.
Scary. Really scary, and some great guests: Denham Elliott, Diana Dors. Oh my God, there was so many on there. Do you have a specific favorite episode that you remember that springs out to you?
Of the ones that I saw, and I remember distinctly. And this is just about a year or so ago. Ian Bannon was in the one where a witch appears from the 16th century or the 17th century and takes on human form and basically just absolutely terrorizes him and his wife, and they're on the verge of having a divorce, him and his wife. And she's having an affair. And boy, that one was just like, whoa. That one was really, really good.
Yeah. But, you know, Ian Bannon, again, he's one of those, like you talk about Terrence Stamp, such a reliable actor. I mean, like he was good in anything he was in. I loved Ian Bannon. Did you ever see, actually, funny enough, and I'm jump. You know what? I'm doing a quick side jump. Did you ever see a movie? And I just picked it up on Blu-ray actually recently, with him and Susan George, and Anna Blackman's in it. Susan George is playing the babysitter, and he's a crazy ex-husband that escapes out of an asylum and comes home, and he is terrifying in it. The movie's called Freight. Have you seen that one?
Oh, I know that one. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know that one.
Yeah, he played a really freaky character.
So by the way, I'm just letting you know, I'm in conversation right now with a gentleman that has written 4 books on English actors, including one on Ian Bannon. If I get him on the podcast, I'm going to be contacting you.
Okay. Yeah, I'm down with that. I love Ian Bannon. So, yeah, I'd love to talk. Yeah, absolutely. 100%. So now I'm going to throw my favorite episode. I'm going to throw you my favorite episode of Hammer House of Horror. And it was called Children of the Full Moon. And it's actually the one I mentioned where Diana Dors was the guest star. And it's about a woman and a husband. They break, you know, classic old trope. They break down in the middle of nowhere, go find a house, stay there the night. And it turns out that they are a family of werewolves. With, you know, like there's a husband and her, and they've all got these werewolf kids. Oh my God, frightened the life out of me. And I remember, it's funny, it brings back a memory, because I remember I watched it with my sister. My dad was in sales at the time, and it was one of these things where, you know, we would go do these, you know, he would go to conferences and stuff up and down the country, and we'd stay in a hotel the night or whatever. And me and my sister had our own room, and, you know, we felt like, oh, great, like we're all adult now. Oh, look, there's a tea maker. It doesn't matter that we don't really drink much. We weren't drinking much tea or anything. It was just, we had to, and I remember we sat and watched that episode in the room together, and frightened the living shit out of us. So good. Oh my God.
Yeah.
So good. So good. Yeah. There's a very unique flavor to UK horror anthologies as opposed to American ones, I find.
Well, I think part of that is the Hammer influence, okay? Because Hammer was distinctly British, and you growing up in the 70s with the Hammer House of Horror, of course, what they were doing in the 70s as far as films are concerned, there's that influence, and there's also the folk horror influence, which is much more prevalent in England than it is here in the States.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think those are the two things that really, really flavor English horror as opposed to American.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from. But it's funny, you know, it seeped into our children's shows as well, though, because I don't know, some of the stuff that I watched as a kid, and when I say watched as a kid, I know we're talking about these, you know, these adult shows like, you know, Tales from the Unexpected, Ham House Horror, yada yada yada, but there were shows that were specifically aimed at kids. I mean, for example, Doctor Who. Doctor Who was a kid show. It had some of the most graphic horror for the time, right? But there was a kids anthology show that I would run home from school to watch, and it was called Dramarama. And you can look this up on IMDb because the funny thing is, Gary Oldman, his first credit was on an episode of Dramarama, believe it or not. He was on there. Mm-hmm. And again, it was one of these things where, you know, the different drama stories for kids and everything, but every now and again, they'd do something spooky. And some of those things, and there's one in particular that springs to mind, and the episode was called Angel of Death. And it's about this mysterious wrestler that's almost like one of these, what do they call the Mexican ones?
Santo.
What do they call the ones where they wear the mask?
Santo. Lucador. Lucadoras.
Right. So he's one of those type of wrestlers where you wear him, and he's like unbeatable. And these kids are obsessed with seeing this guy's face. And no one had ever seen his face, and he's known as the Angel of Death. And right at the end of the episode, this kid goes sneaking up the side of a building to look through the window and see into the dressing room of where this guy is. And as he peels off the mask, I remember he kind of turns around, and he's just got this, like, this terrifying like boils and stuff, like just so frightening that the kid falls off of the building and dies. And I mean, I don't even know if they, if you actually can can kill a child in a TV show, a kid's TV show anymore. I everything's so
powerful. I don't think so.
But, no, right. I don't think so either. But British TV shows regularly dealt with death and several. And this show, like I said, it was a kid's show. And it was one of the trippiest, freakiest things I've ever seen. Like, really. I think, actually, that particular episode, I'm going to go see if it's still on YouTube. But I found it a while ago. Someone had uploaded it to YouTube there. And, like I said, just it permeated our kids' shows as well as our adult shows. It was just
well we had that, too, in a different way. Because we had Sid and Marty Croft in, like, Lidsville. Oh, good God. Think in the 70s, kids' shows driven by cocaine. And I'm not joking. Okay. I'll get you an episode of Lidsville. Now, we're getting toward the end of the hour, and I wanted to ask you, and then I'll give my answer to it. What do you think is the most underrated or lesser known anthology show that you'd like to give a plug to?
Oh, God, that's a good one. That's a good one. I think I would say, and I only ran for about a season, but the host was James Coburn, and it was called Dark Room. Do you remember that one?
I did not see that on first run. Now, that has been mentioned to me many times, and there are a couple episodes that are available on YouTube, and I saw a couple of them. Very good. And Coburn was a great host, too.
Yeah, Coburn
was
a
really
great
host. Good host.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be my one. Particular episode would be No Such Thing as Vampires. And I'm not going to tell you what the twist is in case you can find it on YouTube and watch it, but look out for that episode. So what about you, Carl? What would you say is your most underrated anthology show that you would sort of plug?
I have two thoughts, but one in particular. Now, we know how much we love The Twilight Zone, and The Twilight Zone has been rebooted now 3 times. Okay?
Yeah.
But the reboot of The Twilight Zone in the 1980s, I think, is the most underrated.
Yes.
What they did is they didn't have Rod Serling. They had Burgess Meredith talk to you and give you a little information, you know, just general, you know, this is The Twilight Zone, so on and so forth. But what they tried to do in that show was not do remakes of the early Twilight Zone. Now, there were a couple, but basically what they did is short stories by different writers of horror and science fiction. And so it's much more focusing on adaptations of well-known short stories. And this is the show that gave me a story which I love, absolutely adore, written by Harlan Ellison. And, of course, we're keep talking about Harlan. He's all over this. The story is The Paladin of the Lost Hour. And it's the story of an older gentleman, a Jewish gentleman, played by Danny Kaye, who befriends a young black man. And in this case, it's still he's a Vietnam vet. In this case, it's the 80s. It's been done also where he's a vet in Afghanistan. But forget who it was who played the black gentleman, but he's pretty well known. And it's really, really such a wonderful adaptation. And it's one of those stories that basically tears your heart out. It's not scary at all, but it's just so heartfelt. And I won't say anything more, but it is available on YouTube. And I do recommend
it. It's beautiful. Beautiful.
Seriously.
That's a beautiful episode.
Yeah.
And you know what? And you know what? You're right about that. You're right about that reboot. That was a great. My You know what? Can I tell you what my favorite episode was from that reboot?
Absolutely.
Saturday with Bruce Willis.
Mm-hmm. And who wrote that?
Was that Harlan Ellison as well? Or was that...
No, that wasn't Harlan Ellison. That was based on a Paul Anderson short story, Shattered.
Oh, okay. But that's a great one. I love that one.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Such a wonderful... and it was only on for a season, I think.
It was, yeah.
It was only on for a season. One season. And it's a goddamn shame because I think people... said, well, you know, Rod Serling's no longer with us, so why do we want to watch this? But there were some really – you know who got started on that show, who wrote some of the scripts?
Tell me.
JMS. Joe Straczynski.
Straczynski was –
That was
– Oh, shit.
Yes.
You're right. Oh, my God. I completely forgot that. That's crazy.
Yeah. So there's another B5 connection. So that's really cool.
What kind of a Babylon 5 fan am I? I think I should shoot myself now. I should end this episode with a bang.
No, oh, not at all. No. You can whimper, though, if you like.
Buddy, I can't believe how quickly that hour shot by. It's time for you to do your housekeeping. That's incredible. I love chatting with you.
Well, the thing is, it's two guys just talking. And I think it's a wonderful thing with the two of us. I think we have a good rapport and that sort of thing. So it works out really well. And I'm just so happy you're back with us. Absolutely.
I've enjoyed it, my friend.
Absolutely. So we're going to talk about what we're going to do, the housekeeping here. We are booked for this month. Of course, this is Black History Month. So here we are. Let me just get back here just a moment. So tomorrow we have first-time filmmakers Mike Borgen and Darren Doyle, who did a small short film called Canners, which is about the homeless in L.A. Collecting cans for money so that they can get their cigarettes and so on and so forth. It's a really interesting film, and I hope that people will come in and listen to them. It's something that I really recommend that people watch. Okay, and these are two guys. They wrote this particular film, and they're people to keep an eye on. These are good people, trust me. Then on Thursday, we continue celebrating Black History Month with black filmmakers, and we have a good podcasting friend of mine, Cameron Sullivan, going to be on. Also, Robert Walker, who's a black filmmaker, whose short film Sketchy is now starting the festival run. And so we'll have them on for Thursday. On Friday, Adam is going to be at the Cathode Ray Mission, and we're doing romantic films and television, and I'll be on that one, and I can guarantee you I won't be talking about Made in Manhattan. I'll be doing all the weird things that I love as far as romantic films, and they're not normal, trust me. next week, okay, on Monday, John Killian and Sean Williams will be back with us. Not Monday. Monday, that's Tuesday, and we're doing a watch, another commentary watch on a black film. We haven't decided which one we're doing yet. We got to make that decision. On Monday, you're going to be back with us, okay? And I think we actually decided what we were going to do. So do you want to say that, or shall I?
I'll let you.
Okay. So on Monday, Limes and I will be back. And we lost someone very, very special to us today. It was reported that special effects technician and master Douglas Trumbull passed away.
Yeah.
Douglas Trumbull worked on 2001, A Space Odyssey. He directed Silent Running and Brain Scan. He worked on with Spielberg, and he worked on The Tree of Life. And he also basically invented IMAX. So, you know, I mean, this is a guy that really, really had an impact on film and special effects. And we'll be doing a podcast in memoriam to Douglas Trumbull. And that's on Monday. As a Tuesday, we have the commentary watch. On Wednesday, Vicki Love comes back, and we're going to do our second episode of Intent. And what we do is we take an artist or a genre, and we look at that, and what is the intent of the film? Why did they make the film? What kind of response do they want from it? And on Wednesday, we'll be looking specifically at slasher films. And I can tell you this, if you checked out our last one, which we did on Robert Crumb, there are some real, real opinions that are bashed around. She and I have, we've known each other for a number of years. And one thing we do like to do is argue and have discussions. And that's what we're going to be talking about on Wednesday. On Thursday, Tim Wickens is going to be with me, and we're going to be talking about Black, and this is a week from this Thursday, about basically Black films and non-stereotypical roles and films that we recommend. And so we're going to continue that. Also, we've got a gentleman coming in, Rick Coleman, at the end of the month. I think that's going to be the 26th, which is Fat Domino's birthday, and he'll be talking. He wrote a book about Fat Domino. He's currently writing a book about New Orleans music, and we'll have him on. We're also going to do another music show a week from this Saturday with Rachel down the rabbit hole. We've got even more set up for the end of the month. So we are busy, busy, busy. How does that sound, Limes? You think we're busy?
It sounds like, yeah, you're pretty busy there, my man. Pretty busy.
And I also want you to know that our website is now live, and that is deviantlegion.com. If you go there, you can also check out our Patreon. We are in the midst of changing. We are really now changing our host. We're going to be going to Zencastr here by the end of the month. And that's going to expand into getting people from overseas and foreign people that we can talk to. And so we're working on that. And so that should really gear up in March. So, yeah, we got lots coming down the pike, folks. So please keep listening to us. Again, Limes, it's absolutely been a pleasure. And I just want you to know that we welcome you back. But now, since it's the end of the show, I think we have another song for you before you leave. So you have to listen to this before we say goodnight. Okay? So here we go.
I'm listening.
Here we go.
At last we are to meet him, the famous Captain Spaulding, from climate hot and scalding, the captain has arrived.
Hello, I must be going, I cannot stay. I came to say I must be going. I'm glad I came, but just the same, I must be going.
For my sake, you must stay. If you should go away, you'll spoil the party I am throwing.
I'll stay a week or two. I'll stay the summer through. But I am telling you, I must be going.
Before.
You have lost your goddamn marbles, my friend.
Again,
oh,
I'm so glad you're back. And as I said to you offline, your family, you are always welcome, my friend. No question.
Your family too, brother. Your family too. Thank you for having me on tonight. It's lovely to be back.
Okay. Absolutely. And may I just say that if you haven't done it, please check out Limes' YouTube channel, I Screams. And we did some wonderful interviews, and there's a lot of stuff there to check out. Is there anything else I should say to promote you, sir?
No, just remember that is spelled I-S-C-R-E-E. MZ. There's a Facebook page. There's a YouTube page. I've been away for a while, but rumors of my demise are very, very, very untrue. I'm back. So check it out.
Yes. Welcome back. No, I'm nearly as good as John Sebastian. But yes, we are welcoming him back into the fold. And again, thank you very, very much, Limes, for doing this. And we will see you next week on Monday when we do a memorial to Douglas Trumbull. So that's what we're going to do on Monday. All right?
Sounds good. Have a good night, my friend. Good night, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for listening.
And thank you for listening, and good night.
Good night.
Good night!